CliffCentral.com.
All righty. It is, hang on a second. Let me just do this. CliffCentral.com on a Monday morning. Love to hear from you today. Tell us what you're up to. And it's a little Billy Joel happy song, Uptown Girl, to get you started in the middle of November. Weather's fantastic at the moment. Everything's looking beautiful. It really is the best time. It is the best time. Okay, so I told you I was away for the weekend, and I went out to the bush, which was just absolutely epic. Loved every single thing about it, and it was great to have a break. It's just amazing how it reinvigorates you. And, you know, we've all been in a bit of a rut this year because of the lockdowns and everything else. So I think to actually break away from and to get out of your house, because that's also where we've spent 90 to 100% of our time, it's a really healthy thing to do. I've got to go today and go and do some shopping and stuff because I haven't done that for a while. But I did say it on Friday. I feel like I've become a little bit agoraphobic. And it was nice to also be outdoors and meet new people. And you know, obviously these lodges have taken all the precautions. The staff wear masks all the time. And, you know, there's hand sanitizer everywhere and social distancing, blah, blah, blah. But it didn't feel weird. It felt kind of like a return to normal in some ways. And I think that's so healthy. We'll speak to Tim Kelly just now about what he thinks of lockdowns. He's in Cape Town. And he's very, very happy he's not back in the UK. A friend of mine in London said it's absolute hell there at the moment. Just, you know, people, the second lockdown is just going to ravage businesses. It's put the whole country on hold. And
oh, no.
Again, I'm going to say I'm so happy we've got the government we've got, because they don't know what they're doing most of the time. Or they do, in which case I'll give them credit, because having another lockdown would just... it would destroy South Africa. So we're very lucky to be where we are. Anyway, I did something stupid last night. I got home and my internet wasn't working, and I was really nervous to, you know, do the show the next morning, because if we don't have internet, I can't do the show. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, I'm going to have to go on my phone and use 3G and blah, blah, blah. But I got on the helpline with the my internet service provider, and although I was on hold for a long time, they were really, really good. Talked me through it, and I sorted it out. But I was, you know, I was panicking. I thought, oh, I'm not going to have internet. I'm going to have someone come and fix the line, because I thought it might have been the you know, there was a fiber disconnection in the area or something like that. But it's amazing how dependent on this stuff we've become. And when I say I did something stupid, my stupid thing was to panic when these things can be fairly easily resolved. It was just, you know, because it's so important to our work that we have internet. But there are people who, even if it's not important to work, they feel like internet is a human right. And, you know, for example, over the weekend, you don't have great signal in the bush. I mean, they have Wi-Fi in the lodge, but I didn't have my phone with me most of the time. And it was fine.
Yeah.
I was okay. I used it basically. I used my phone to take pictures. That's all.
Mm.
I hardly replied to any messages. I hardly... communicated with anybody, and it was really cool.
Yeah, it's that feeling of sending out an out of office email and saying, I'll have limited connection to Wi-Fi. Yay.
Yeah.
But it's cool when it's by choice. You don't want the last thing that would, you know, really excite me is if I lost my internet connection right now with a full day of work ahead things to do. If you opt for it and, you know, you need to breathe every once in a while, great. But if not, don't play that card.
But it's cool to know that the internet service providers and a lot of businesses these days can talk you through things. I mean, they must deal with some pretty stupid people. And I don't think I was very clever yesterday, because I was taking, you know, step by step saying, okay, what do I do here? And she was talking me through it. So it was a relief to know that, that, you know, somebody can help you when you don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, Gareth, a.k.a. Mr. Stupid. Mr. I Think Lockdown Is Stupid. You could have just gone to the office to do the show. You know that, right? Yes, I do. But the problem is everybody else is here. And then, you know, we have to reconfigure the whole thing. So that was an option, Carl. I do get that. He says he's at gym listening to Cliff Central. I wasn't wearing my mask because I was nowhere near anyone else. One of the staff members literally chased me around to get my attention so I could put my mask on. People have lost the ability to exercise logic. It's ridiculous. Yeah, I agree. Rajesh says, I can't believe you guys are talking about perfume and Damon's not on. Oh, yeah, of course.
I did think about that.
He's an expert. He's some kind of expert. I mean, you know, he mixes these things and sells his generic perfumes. That's a good point.
Something Garden.
What is it called?
Something Garden.
Fragrance. Fragrance Garden. That's Damon's business. All right. Okay, very good. We're recording a TV show for you for this week, and last week we didn't have our show because Cyril had to make an announcement with the things that he announced.
Oh, yes,
I can't really remember. So, but he did interrupt our TV show, so we've got to play out that show this week, and we've got some really interesting guests coming up. So I advise if you just make a note in your diary, it'll just keep you on top of what we're doing there. And we're trying to put together some really, really cool people, great panels, talk about things that really matter. And I'm excited about today's show. I'll tell you about it when Wednesday rolls around, because now we're going to be a week ahead in the recordings, which is awesome. All right. Let's take a look.
Not even for Wednesday. It won't even apply for Wednesday.
Really?
Oh, well, it's recorded.
No.
This Wednesday will be last week's show.
Yeah, so we're a week ahead. That's what I meant. From now. Okay. Right? am I correct? I mean, you're confusing me now, Sia.
There's a full recorded show, then there's a guest that's separately recorded, and then today we're recording a panel and a guest. It's just a week.
Jesus. All right. Well, you know what? We just bored everyone to death with that explanation of stuff that really only affects us. Okay.
That's why I wanted to leave.
All right. Okay. Let's move on, everybody. All right. Ass, what's going on with you this week? What have you got to talk about?
Well, I've been feeling very motivated after my Good Friday the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
And I stumbled across an article which has 103 lessons from people often learn too late in life.
Ooh.
I'm obviously not going to go through all of them, but some of them just were very motivating.
Oh, why not? We can just keep the show going until, I don't know, 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Here's something that we've probably battled to do during COVID for a lot of us.
All right.
And that's to remember to pay yourself first. So save 10% of what you earn.
Okay.
you can't control everything, but you can control how you respond. I like that one.
That's for you, Gareth. That's what they teach you when you've been a douchebag and you're feeling sorry for yourself. They always say to you, you know, you can't change what's happened, but you can change the way you react to it. So I know that's true, but I hate hearing it because it's easier said than done.
Yeah. This one's for you, especially after last night. Worry is a waste of time. It's a misuse of your imagination.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Stupid.
Yeah. This one really applies to me, and also especially through my mom's recovery after a stroke. And she even had a T-shirt that said this: think progress, not perfection.
Okay.
your ambition, goal, or even ideas means nothing without execution.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
One more time.
Your ambition, goal, or even your ideas mean nothing without execution.
I always say that's like Da Vinci having the idea of painting the Mona Lisa, but never actually painting it.
Yeah. In other words, do what you should. Don't talk about what you should be doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do it. Do it, basically.
Yeah.
Nike's slogan. That's the one.
Mm-hmm. The human mind is the most adaptable tool there is. Make it work for you in a time of crisis. No matter what happens, you can adapt and stay calm.
Mm.
Oh, some people have lost their minds, though.
Hey,
that's true.
It's been a really tough year, so if you have lost your mind, you can be forgiven, but don't stay there. You know, once you've lost your mind and you you figured out it's doing you no good, come back into the real world and start making things happen.
Yeah.
You know, look at how the tables have turned. The fact that I'll bring up something that's slightly pessimistic and Leanne is the one giving us a quote a second here. I think a very harsh realization for a lot of people come the 31st of December, which flips onto the 1st of Jan 2021, is that time will make no change to things at all. It is about what you actually do and how you change your whole situation. People who think, oh, 2020 will be behind us, well, we'll get a very rude awakening. You'll still have the same issues, the same debt, the same worries on your mind, the same things to deal with at the office. So rather change your situation than hope to change the calendar.
Yeah, all that stuff doesn't stop just because just because the calendar date has changed.
Yep.
What else?
Leanne, you're muted.
It's like Y2K, where something drastic was going to happen on the night.
Yeah, well, exactly. Look, we don't want to put too fine a point on it, but there are some things that we've all learnt this year. And just going back to the way things used to be is not necessarily the answer, obviously. So, you know, if you learn something from it and if you take something away from it and you improve your life as a result of even bad things, then you've done well.
Yeah.
It has been unnerving in certain instances to feel like you're losing your sense of normality and your routine. You lose your routine. But then also it's a chance to redefine things. And it's like, all right, actually, yeah, don't have to do that. Or that wasn't
like this
the best.
Works better.
Yeah.
Sitting in traffic every day.
You have three choices in life.
Yeah. What are they?
Give up, give in, or give it all you've got.
Hang on. What's the difference between give up and give in? I know that sounds stupid, but
if you give up, that's pretty self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. But giving in is more giving in to other people's pressures.
No, okay.
All I had in my head is never gonna give you up, never gonna make you cry.
Oh my god! I saw the funniest poster. It said, instead of voting for Donald Trump or Joe Biden, you should vote for Rick Astley because he will never give you up, let you down, make you cry, say goodbye, turn around, and hurt you.
Yes.
Or desert you.
Yes.
And then this final one that I love, and it's something that my dad said to me just recently. He phoned me when I was feeling a bit down, and he said, just remember, the world owes you nothing.
Yeah.
You have to do the work, and that's this one. Everything is on you. No one is coming to save you.
Right.
You are in charge. Embrace this mindset and you can change your life.
Yeah, people don't like hearing that. They're looking for saviors. They want that. People, you know, live their lives hoping someone's going to come around the corner and sweep them off their feet and solve all their problems and save them. And it's just, that's wish thinking. It's childish. And I mean that it's not going to be someone who, you know, some lover. It's not going to be a parent. It's not going to be a billionaire, and it's not going to be the government. No one's going to come and save you. You've got to get your shit together yourself. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's how it goes. All right. Well, those are useful. They make me feel a bit better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not so bad.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Ass. What do you got in your mind today, Sia?
So I got into story and this family over the weekend as well. I find it so weird. We've spoken about the Kennedys.
Yes.
And how they seem to not be the luckiest family around because there's some mess going on with them. But here's another family who seem to have a bit of a curse, and that's the Guinness family. And that's the renowned Guinness, as in you drink Guinness family.
Right.
They have a way of all dying freakish ways. I'm not laughing. No.
Yeah.
So sorry, because if I just trying to formulate what the best way to say it. There's no other way. It's freak accidents.
I don't know anything about this family, so you're coming in here with new information for me. So take it from the top. Give me some of the stories.
Yeah, so the founder of Guinness, as we know it today, is Arthur Guinness, and he started the brewery back in 1759, and he became the richest man in Ireland back then. He fathered 21 children.
Jeez.
Oh, my word.
But lost 10 of them before he...
See, are you frozen? Maybe the Guinness...
Just like 10 children. Yeah. But I mean, losing 10 children out of 21 is like losing one out of two.
Yeah. Just quickly, while we're
waiting... It can happen.
While we're waiting for Sia to come back, because this Guinness story sounds interesting, I'll get to the rest of that story in a second, but we've launched a new show about sharks, a new podcast show, which you might want to listen to. It's on cliffcentral.com. It's brand new. It's really, really cool. And I'd love you to take a listen and tell us what you think. It's co-hosted.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's co-hosted by Spike, who's one of our producers. And he has extensive experience in podcasting, and he's been researching the hell out of this. And Anthony Medera, who does Blind History with me. And the two of them are doing the show. So you might want to go and check that out on cliffcentral.com. It's really, really cool. And you can see what the state of... sharks is, I mean, you know, shark infested waters are actually a good thing, but it's coming to an end and people are asking questions. So you can find out more by going to cliffcentral.com and you can listen to our shark podcast. Sorry.
I got caught up in a tunnel of videos on YouTube.
Face rather.
The Googler.
Face-stagram. And on shark attacks. Yeah. And it was particularly in the Whit Sands in Australia. Mm-hmm. And it just made me think, and what had happened was there were a number of some fatal and some very bad injuries, a number of shark attacks during one specific period over a year. And they actually started culling the sharks, which made me really upset.
Yeah.
Because like they say, sharks are, they don't stick to one territory. They move around. The area is going to fill up very quickly again with more sharks. But it did confirm for me that I really don't want to be in the water. Thank you. I'll go on top of the water.
Yeah. I think that the people have this irrational fear of sharks. And I mean, I'm prone to it just like anyone else. But people who die in shark attacks, it's like it's a tiny, 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 tiny percentage of people.
I know.
So we're unjustifiably afraid of these things. I think that the Jaws movie did more bad PR for sharks than anything else.
Hugely.
Yeah. But let's just get back. Let's get back to the Guinnesses, because Sia's got some stories there for us. And by the way, Mbulelo says that he went to the tour at Guinness in Ireland, and mm-hmm. it was wild. He says that apparently the guy who started the company signed a 9,000-year lease at £45 a year. So that's a good deal.
I've actually also been on that tour. I went to the Guinness factory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they take you through a number of stories or levels.
Yeah.
And you end up at the top at the bar where you have your Guinness. And it's a round building of glass. And on the, I mean, the views are stunning. And on the glass walls are little arrows pointing to what you can see in the distance, telling you what building it is and a little bit about it. It was really fascinating.
Damn, that's pretty cool.
Sorry, folks, I don't know what had happened there where we broke up, but I had told you that he lost 10 of his kids and you guys had a shocked look on your face. Yeah, after a while, I realized, oh no, it's frozen.
It was pretty shocking.
So, yeah.
You lose 10 of your children, it's bound to be fairly shocking. All right, so that was the founder of the company. Tell us some
more. Arthur Guinness. And uh-huh. then as we trickle down the rest of the family, you see things like, and these are people who, the family members who've been heirs to a lot of lofty positions within the family company. Some have oddly ended up in mental institutions. Uh-oh. Some have done shoddy business decisions, so end up dying of poverty. There was a Lord Moyne who ended up becoming the British Minister for Middle East Affairs, part of the Guinness family, who was, get this, murdered in Cairo by a terror group in 1944.
Jesus.
Some believe a terror from the Guinness family was the inspiration behind the Beatles song A Day in the Life, because Tara was in a car and was driving at high speed and missed a red light, and next thing smashed into a van and killed himself there. Back in 1978, a Lady Henrietta Guinness was pushed off a bridge in Italy, and there's still little known around that. And then a couple of years after that, a four-year-old Peter Guinness was killed in a car crash. Twisted. And it's all these accidents, and there are many details that are left around this. So cut to, like, every couple of years, you just see, like, this very freakish accident. Cut to 2020, a few weeks ago, an honor, her name was Honor, H-O-N-O-R, died in a freak accident in a swimming pool.
So this is now, recently.
This was a few weeks ago.
Jesus.
There was a party at the Guinness family manor, and Honor was a granddaughter of Benjamin Guinness, and she was found unconscious at the bottom of a swimming pool. Now, what makes it all very weird is the fact that it was a party. There were supposedly 19 people on the property attending this party, but no one seems to know when Anna actually went into the pool. She wasn't drinking, so you can't exactly say, oh, she was drinking, so, you know, she was drunk and fell into the water. There are still investigations being held around this, but no one seems to exactly understand what happened to Anna.
Wow.
And people are saying, well, it's just the Guinness family curse. Weird, right?
It's a lot of horrible things happening. My God.
The beginning part sounded like any family. One's in a mental institution, the other one's made bad business decisions.
Yeah, some of them die of poverty.
Yeah.
It's just really shitty.
But the being pushed off a bridge thing?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's horrible. That's
crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. Wow. Yeah. Okay, so in other words, don't have two surnames, and they're both Irish, ironically. Kennedy or Guinness, because both of them are not good.
My uncle is Kennedy, and he's related to the Kennedys. He lives in Connecticut.
Hmm. You've told us.
So I have family members, many, who are Kennedy.
You got to be careful.
All's going well. All's going well.
Jesus.
Knock on wood.
Hmm. D says drinking Guinness 0% alcohol is like going to a whorehouse for a hug.
Is that all you got out of the story?
Yeah, listen. Some people, that's what they're looking for. That's the short circuit to everything. Why am I hearing myself in the background again? Ass, is there something going on?
It's my audio issue today. I have an issue.
It's coming out of the wrong place again?
Yeah. I'm hoping it resolves itself at some point.
Just to go back to the sharks discussion a little earlier that we were having, Nico says, cows and toasters kill more people than sharks.
Wow.
So it's an irrational fear.
Yeah.
If you ever enter a game show, this could be a question that makes you a winner.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly, if you punch a shark in the eye or the nose, it might help you survive.
Or it'll make the shark more angry, and then it'll want to eat you faster. That's the way I feel about it.
I don't know how you're meant to get momentum in water for a strong punch, but use it, don't use it, could save your life.
Hey, I don't know if you saw the story, but Holland, the Netherlands, has become the first country in the world to home all stray dogs.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Leanne will like
that. First country in the world to what?
To home all stray dogs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, if, you know, in the whole world, I mean, that's a really great development. Obviously, it's only in one country, so we're not going to get too excited about it. But it's a good story. And I suppose, you know, because
that's amazing.
Because you're such an animal rights activist, there's probably something about that that will make you very happy.
Absolutely.
And I know that you're interested in sterilizing dogs that are, you know, that come from neighborhoods where they just breed and breed and breed, and where the owners don't necessarily have the means to sort that out. But the World Health Organization estimates there are around 200 million stray dogs worldwide. And the Netherlands is going to make sure that in their country, all of them are given a home. It sounds unbelievable, but it's true. The Netherlands has managed to completely eradicate stray dogs. And the amazing news is that they did it without any euthanasia.
Sure. That's amazing. Yeah. Mm. Sterilization's a way to go.
And they've got a program called Adopt, Don't Shop, which is supported by high taxes on people who buy puppies. And that pushes people to adopt from more than 200 dog shelters in the country. The animal control works like a charm. Anyone who spots a stray dog can call them and they will rescue the animal and take care of it until it's adopted.
Very cool.
Love it.
Yeah, so that's quite a good story. Very, very nice. Somebody says, uh-oh, I married into the Kennedy family. Yeah, you see, that's bad idea, Cassandra. Bad idea.
Change your surname at the very least.
Yeah.
Go back to your maiden name.
And then we were talking about perfumes and colognes earlier, and apparently you must spray behind your ears because the alcohol stains your skin, and obviously it can stain your clothes as well. That's from Christine. Michelle says, punching a shark in the nose is the best way to save yourself. And of course, Michelle works at the aquarium, so she knows this, right?
See, I also know this.
And that is because the shark's nose is its most sensitive part. They have little holes there that are called ampules of Lorenzini, and they work in a similar way to the way cat's whiskers work. So if you punch a shark in the nose, it will catch it by surprise, and usually it will leave you alone. It's really helpful info. I wouldn't pass that on if I didn't know that Michelle was a specialist in this area.
Yeah.
And apparently Mick Fanning, who is one of the most famous people for making an escape from a shark. He's a pro surfer. He punched a shark on TV and managed to get away. How's that?
Mm.
So there we go. There's some info for you that you, if you didn't know, now you know. And if you don't know, now you know. That's what Notorious B.I.G. says. Okay, cool. Let's see if we can get Tim Cully on, because Tim has got some very, very strong opinions, and I think that's good on lockdown. He's originally from England, but he's in South Africa. He's been living in Cape Town for a while, and I'm sure you prefer being here at this time. I mean, what the hell's going on in England? What is wrong with them? Tim, how are you?
Hi, Gareth. Morning. How are you?
Yeah, good, man. Very, very good. Tim and I were talking on WhatsApp the other day, and you know, we do some business together because Tim is an advertising guru, and we do a full 360-degree service for anybody who's looking for, you know, something new, something different, something digital, something that'll take your business forward, especially if you've got a small or medium-sized business and you're thinking of taking things up a level. You can get hold of us for that. But I was talking to Tim about lockdowns. You've got family in the UK. How's it going for them there?
Yeah, all my family are there. Usually mum and dad are out here now for summer. They're kind of retired swallows, so they come out South Africa in the summer and go back there. So it's the first winter they've had back there for a long time. And so they're pretty unhappy.
Right.
Because obviously travel restrictions and they can't come out, and it's lockdown number two and so forth and so on. So, yeah.
So what are they able to do and what are they not? How strong is this lockdown? Because in the beginning, England was one of the places that took the longest to lock down. And then obviously there was public pressure put on Boris and the rest of the government. And then they felt they had to do something. And so they did, and they went into a lockdown, and Boris obviously got sick. And then, you know, they've lost a lot of people, but actually they've also demolished their economy. Then they came out of lockdown and they decided to go into a second one.
Yeah, it's mad. And it's funny because I remember talking to my folks, when we went into level five, and you know, we were literally fastened to our house and all that, and they couldn't believe it because they said, "Oh, but you know, I mean, human rights. How can they stop you doing this and stop you doing that?" And that whole conversation started, and it's come 360 now. They're at a point where, you know, you can't see anyone from another household. They are still allowed to go out and exercise at any time that they like, unlike we were. And they can't travel in cars unless it's a, what do you call it? You know, essential journey or something.
Right.
And so they have actually got roadblocks. They've got police pulling over. And I spoke to mum yesterday, and, you know, there were four people that pulled over and fined heavily because they had four people from different households in one car. So it is pretty close to where we were, to be honest.
Now, what makes this very strange is that, honestly, it seems like the British government don't know what they're doing, because they at one minute at one point they're going left, the next moment they're going right. They seem to be also trying to please a population which is increasingly paranoid. I mean, most people in the UK are actually for lockdowns, which is so odd.
Yeah, it's,
are they afraid? Are they paranoid? What's going on?
Full disclosure, I'm a big Boris fan, so, and I think he's, yeah, you know, I mean, God, what a hand he's been dealt with this and Brexit and so forth. You know, it's incredible. But essentially, it all stems, as you say, Gareth, from fear. And that fear has been generated by the media. I mean, let's look at it simply. You know, by reporting how many people die from something every single day, you're going to generate an awful lot of fear.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is that it's not put in context. So, you know, 1.5 million people die every year from car accidents. If on the news every day you said, which is 4,000 people a day. So if you announced every day, globally, 4,000 people have died from road accidents today, and the next day it was the same, and the next day it was the same, and you showed car crashes and so forth and so on, you generate an awful lot of fear because there's no context to go with it.
Well, but it's even worse than that, because they're not reporting the deaths. What they're doing is reporting the infections. And they're telling people, well, if these people are infected, you know, that's terrible. But it isn't always, because most people, especially young people, are, you know, they're asymptomatic. They don't necessarily have anything wrong with them. So you're not only instilling fear, but you're giving them the wrong information.
Gareth, this is what I'm so shocked about. And you look at it globally, it's not just the UK. Yeah. Is when this all started, every decision that was being made was based on forecasts made by epidemiologists, and I fully respect that. And they were forecasting, they didn't have anything else to go on, and we haven't had a pandemic before.
Sure.
So credit to them, let's look to the experts, and they gave us these forecasts, and decisions were made based on those forecasts. What I can't quite wrap my head around at this point is we've had COVID-19 for a year now. The data's there, the data's sitting in front of us. You don't have to forecast. The data is the data. The number of deaths is the number of deaths. And decisions are not being made based on that data. And I'm just saying to the sheeple that are scared, I'm like, give me one piece of factual data in context with everything else, and that's the most important thing, that justifies A, the cure to this disease, and B, justifies that it's, the cure's actually working.
And
there
you,
just
and,
isn't.
And you say cure, but that's in inverted commas. And Boris...
Exactly.
Boris, as much as you like him, he's an idiot, because now he's apparently encountered somebody in the last couple of days who had COVID. So he's gone into isolation again. I mean, this is just it's paranoia. But I think he's doing it to cover his ass, right? Because he knows that there are people in the UK who are just terrified and who have been terrified by the media and by epidemiologists and by the experts and everybody else. And if he doesn't do this, he gets the blame.
That's the thing. And I, again, it's a bit like we're going now, we're forecasting what the effect is on people's livelihoods. You know, what, Gareth, what the effect is going to be on all those people who are going to have elective surgery that have now been, they're now on the NHS waiting list for 12 months' time and everything because they've been shoved out of the hospital, you know?
Right, right.
My, you know, personally, my auntie has been diagnosed with cancer. She just had to have a hysterectomy because of it. My mum is driving into the hospital and so forth, but she's not allowed in. So my mum sits in the car for 3.5 hours, you know, while she has this. It's going to be the same process for the chemo that she has to have. You know, mum can't go in with her or all of this. All this craziness, the effect that that's going to have longer term on people's livelihoods, welfare, mental health, all of that is so far away that they're almost turning a blind eye to it because it's not immediately relevant. And the only thing that's immediately apparent is the deaths.
And,
but as I said, there's still no evidence that it's stopping any deaths. I don't think it is.
And it's so strange. Like we've had worse viruses in the past. We've had worse disease outbreaks in the world in the past. And we've had more virulent and dangerous diseases. And we've dealt with them like we've dealt with any other disease. You kind of, the population has to build up an immunity to it. And we have to struggle on. We can't stop our lives. What kind of this is almost like, and I need to ask you about the NHS, because in Britain, the NHS is worshipped as if it were a god. And people think that this is the singular and the greatest achievement of post-war Britain, is this National Health Service. They, you know, people were going out into the street and clapping for nurses and doctors as if they were worshipping ancient Egyptian idols. It's just the most incredible thing. Tell me about the mentality of people when it comes to the NHS in Britain, because it's something South Africans can't understand, because our public health service is so shit that no one would want to use it, even if they didn't have a choice.
Mm. Look, I think the NHS is an accomplishment, I think. But, you know, with old British and stiff upper lip and everything, the good stuff is always, you know, kind of front and center, which is kind of different to how the news is at the moment. But I think it has been, you know, a success. People are always going to focus on, or the media is always going to focus on the wait times. And there are significant wait times. It's not like you don't get the service there that you do here in private healthcare.
Sure.
So don't, you know, basically, I suppose it's a happy medium between how bad South Africa's government healthcare is versus how good the private healthcare is. It sits somewhere in the middle. But ultimately, it is free healthcare to the whole nation. So, you know, I think that is an achievement. It's certainly not something the US has, who are, you know, held up as the capitalist icon of the world.
Mm. Hmm. But there's something about it that is very odd, in that the British people are... there's a devotion to it, and I'm not sure whether it's just because it's free or whether it's because the service is really good, and in some cases it is. In many cases, it absolutely isn't. But there seems to me to be a very strange connection to this thing. It's almost taken the place of a state religion for some people.
Yeah. No, look, it's true. I mean, welfare throughout the UK is, I mean, it depends how strong a capitalist you are, but it's interesting, because there's a lot of people get more welfare than that's why they don't work. You know, the unemployed, they're better off getting child support for two kids, they get free accommodation, they get, you know, living allowance, they get pension, they get all of this stuff laid on, and you live a very comfortable life, you know, just based on the welfare, and the healthcare is part of that. I mean, it is important to note that there is Bupa, and there are several private healthcare options in the UK that you can pay for, that obviously you get the best of the best and you get it instantly. So, right. You know, the NHS is not so good that it doesn't require those.
But,
you know, so
but people, you're talking about the welfare system, the dole, right? That's what they call it. You go on the dole.
Correct. Yeah.
And with that, There are many people who get these child support payments, or they get unemployment benefits, and it does pay them better to sit at home and eat chips than it does if they had to go out and get a job that doesn't pay very well.
No, absolutely right. And, you know, there's even a you know, nice chat about the dogs just now. I'm a dog owner. You know, there's even a dog allowance if you have a dog. So there's a dog. once you've got a dog allowance, two kids allowance, housing allowance, you know, so forth and so on. Exactly as you say, it's you know, versus a job, I don't know, whatever it might be, you know, an entry level job. Yeah, you're better off with your allowances, and that's something that they're sort of trying to address. Although, you know, with the national debt now the highest it's ever been because of COVID-19, I don't know how they're going to address that anytime soon.
Yeah, and it makes the government your parent, in effect. And listen, don't get me wrong. I'm not one of those hardcore people who thinks that, yeah, everybody has to fend for themselves and survival of the fittest. I mean, there are people in society who do need help. And here in South Africa, we're paying for 16 or 17 million people who are also on welfare. So we're in no position to be pointing fingers. But when it comes to this lockdown stuff, you would really rather be here than in the UK, right?
Well, look, I didn't say that when we were on level 5, but right now, as I said, looking again at the facts, we're in a pretty good position. I think we've got through this relatively unscathed.
Yeah.
Again, I'll just look at the data, Gareth. That's all. I'm not a narcissist. I'm just looking at the data. And when you look at the data, I mean, you know, worldwide, it's not even in the top 10 causes of death, COVID-19. Yeah. And yet, do you know how much it's cost the global economy? About 28 trillion. And this is what is kind of heartbreaking for me is, as you said, the help that people in South Africa as one need. But globally, 28 trillion literally could have wiped out global famine, wiped out, given everyone fresh water. You know, yeah. The opportunity cost of spending this on something that the actual figure is 99.9987% of the world's population will not die from.
And yet, I can't back these numbers up.
It's extraordinary.
And yet you get the very serious impression that governments and politicians are doing only what they need to do to not get fired at the voting booth. Yeah. That's what they're doing. They're not really doing this out of care and consideration for people's health or for their overall well-being or for the, you know, protecting their jobs or looking after them. It's really just about the politicians. They're trying to do whatever it takes to make it look like they're doing things about this, even if they're doing nothing. Because what is a lockdown, really? Government has to do absolutely zero. None of them are taking any salary cuts. None of them are losing their jobs. Yeah. It's everybody else who takes the heat on this one.
Sadly, I think you're right. I don't know if it's as facing as kind of I'm just trying to protect my job, but you're absolutely right. Politicians are brought up on being seen to be doing something. I mean, my blame, to be honest, sits a lot more with the media. And until that narrative changes, until the rhetoric changes, I don't know where we're going to be. I think it's just highlighted what a fearful species we are. I think so many people live in fear of leaving a job, leaving a partner, or starting a relationship. They're in fear of so many things.
Yeah.
And this has highlighted and accentuated it. And to be honest, those that are in power are kind of the few people that actually necessarily don't have fear and are kind of making strong decisions. Mm. But they're just making strong decisions, as you said, in their own self-interest, it appears to be. And just they're answering to the media. You know,
they're answering to the
news channels. They're the people that run the countries. It's not the politicians. The politicians are just doing what they're pressured to do. But actually, you can see it now, that it's the media that run it. And as you said, they're one of the few industries that is not getting affected by COVID-19. The media isn't. If anything, there's more clicks, they've got more revenue generated from this than they ever have before. It's the biggest piece of news in the 21st century. So the media are the ones running this, and they are the ones who are not affected in any way economically by it. I haven't seen Sky News laying anyone off.
No, they won't. They've probably hired more people. So, Tim, are your folks able to travel out here yet, or are there travel restrictions at the moment? They can't leave the UK.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, they were planning to come out in November, and the travel restrictions were here. The UK was on the red list, right. So that's why they couldn't come in this direction. I've got a ticket booked for Christmas week to go back to the UK. So I've got a ticket booked on Virgin Atlantic. I don't know if I'm going to be, I assume I'm going to be able to leave here.
Right.
The question will be getting back into South Africa, but the red list seems to have lifted now. So assuming I get a test, but you know, the thing is, I'm going to be going to the UK on Christmas week. If it's still a 14 day or even a 7 day quarantine period, what am I going to do? I'm going to go home and sit and look at my folks for 7 days. I mean, I've got two godchildren out there, all my university friends, family, all these fantastic people that you spend so much time at Christmas seeing, which is important to me. And at this rate, I'm not going to be able to see anybody.
Ironically, I mean, California, the governor there, a guy called Gavin Newsom, he said that he will actually send law enforcement into people's houses over the holidays if they don't observe social distancing rules. Can you imagine a population that would allow the state into their Christmas dinner or their Christmas lunch in order to separate them because they aren't maintaining social distancing? I mean, that is where people need to pick up weapons and fight the state. It's just outrageous.
Gareth, you joke, but in the UK, if people can see a car that they don't know in someone's driveway, they're reporting it. Just saying there's a car in that driveway, I haven't seen it before, they must have people in that house. I mean, the damage this is going to do, it's just extraordinary. Just extraordinary.
Can't take it.
And as I said, you know, for something that 0.0013% of the world is going to die from, when you look at heart disease killing 13 million people a year, Stroke 7 million, cancer 7 million, 6 million to pneumonia, bacteria, TB. Why are we locking down for that? It's exactly the same. Respiratory disease.
Correct.
You know, infectious, etc. We don't lock down for that. 2 million tragically die of Alzheimer's, 1.6 of diabetes, 1.4 from road deaths, 1.3 die of diarrhea. Now, how easy that is to cure.
Jesus.
And yet, and now right down the bottom comes COVID-19 with 1.3 million. And you look at all of those numbers, that's the one we've spent $25 trillion on.
Wow.
You know, just makes no sense to me. And that's all I'm saying is the data. You know, why aren't we looking at the data and making those decisions now? We don't need to forecast. We don't need to predict. It's there. Yeah. And yet they're the decisions being made. I just find it extraordinary.
Well,
basically, it's got, you know, kids walked in with a grazed knee and they've said, well, I think we should probably amputate. You know, probably take the leg off. That's probably the best decision. It's like, it's mental.
Well, I thought with your strong opinions on this, and most of them are the things that I completely agree with, it would be interesting to hear your point of view. I hope that all your friends and family in the UK are soon released from their bondage and you can actually see each other for the holidays, because my God, otherwise it's going to be a very, very bland Christmas for everybody. And there's no fun in a European winter unless there's Christmas.
But you see, that's it, Gareth. It's an important time worldwide, but you know, Britain is wedded to its Christmas time, especially in those dark days. It's dark by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Christmas is an important time there, and it's a very family thing. So if Christmas is cancelled, yeah, it's a very sad day.
Dreadful. All right, thanks, Tim. Nice to see you again, though. Always good to talk to you. Tim Kelly, yeah.
Cool.
Terrific. Anytime. Thanks, man. Anytime. Ciao.
Cool.
There we go. There's Tim. See, imagine spending Christmas in lockdown and you're not allowed to see your family and friends. I mean, we're sitting here complaining about how, oh, you know, we have to wear masks. And obviously that we did go through a lot more stringent a set of rules when we were in level 5. But the idea that you would be forbidden from seeing your loved ones at Christmas time, I mean, you're going to see people just losing their shit.
Yeah. No, it's incredible. It's been so important to hear the other side right now.
Yeah.
To make us realize what we do have and how fortunate we are that government is doing what it needs to do right now. It's acting in the right way.
Yeah, by the way, Dud says, can Tim suggest websites or links to see the data? Well, I would say the first place you should stop is Panda. Pandemics data analysis. They're a South African collective. There are some auditors in there. There are some doctors in there. There are people who've done the number crunching, and you can go and look at their statistics because they're unassailable, and it would be worth having a look at what they're up to. So Panda is the first place to go. Astrid says, sadly, I think we're going to have more suicide deaths due to lockdowns than we will from the virus itself. And that's probably true. And of course, the long tail of this, you know, which is that people will lose their jobs, people will lose their livelihoods, blah, blah, blah. But we've spoken about this ad infinitum.
Well, if you look at the figures, if I just look at my own family, and we've had one suicide from COVID and zero deaths from COVID, the disease.
Yeah, you see, that's what I'm talking about. I personally know one person who committed suicide. So when it gets close to home, you know, that's when it starts becoming really, really awful. And somebody pointing out that the interesting thing about the NHS in Britain is it's not free. People pay for it with very high taxes. And that's true. Yeah. That's true. That's where people don't realize that you may be getting a medical service for free, or the prices might be better, but you're paying for that. Someone's paying for that. Nothing is for free. And if you think things are for free, you're just a child.
And there's always a catch.
Mm-hmm.
Read the fine print.
That's right. A lot of people very excited about that story from Holland about the dogs all being adopted and how dogs are
it's
able.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, if I think back to my first trip to Portugal. What?
There was a P there, if I think.
Think.
If I think about my first trip to Portugal, this is decades ago, and at nighttime, you would hear gunshots because the authorities would go onto the streets and just cull all of the street animals, the homeless animals. And you just think how Holland has done this without euthanasia at all.
Yeah.
It's just through sterilization and education and benefits if you adopt.
Jesus. I think that's very sensible. That's where you can kind of pressurize people to do the right thing. A quick update. Apparently, Panda are filing court papers today to end the state of disaster, which, of course, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma keeps extending because it means that she doesn't have to check with Parliament if she wants to institute new rules or procedures. So I think that the state of disaster should be called to an end. It's ridiculous now. And then somebody saying, I agree with Leanne. Toilet spray of any kind is revolting. That's from John T. Yeah, you know, there are a few smells in the world that are just never, you can't do anything about. And for example, the smell of a bathroom after someone's taken a dump. No amount of toilet spray makes that better. In fact, the toilet spray almost makes it worse.
Yeah.
You just need new air.
The combination's not good.
That's why all bathrooms, if they don't have a window, have to have a fan in the ceiling.
Absolutely.
Not just the smell, but because that would be bad ventilation and terrible things can happen to you if you breathe in putrid air, right?
No, it's also about the sharticles.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, it's not Panda who are doing the filing of the court papers. It's actually an unlockdown group, and it's spearheaded by Dear SA. So those guys are doing a great job. And I think in future, someone will have the balls to say, those guys are heroes. And then we'll look back and we'll go, yeah, they were heroes. They were the people who saw through the bullshit. Absolutely.
Do you think this year and this time has been enough to change most people when it comes to their opinions about government and the type of leadership we have?
Who knows, Sia? You know, all over the world, people have this nasty habit of voting against their own interests over and over again. And even if you look at Britain and something Tim was talking about just now, most people in England are actually for the lockdowns. They like the idea of the lockdowns because they believe it will keep them safer. They've got no reason to believe that. There's no evidence to support that, but they'll still choose that because it gives them the illusion of safety. Many people would rather lose their jobs. They think that the money will just come, that they can live on welfare. They don't have any idea. They're basically kids. And I'm not knocking kids this morning by saying this the whole time. But if you think like a child and you think things can be solved the way that children do, then when it doesn't happen, you cry and you have a tantrum. But unfortunately, the real world, things don't happen for nothing and people can't just come and save you. There's no one who can do it. There's no government powerful or rich enough to save you. So it's very, very odd to me that adult human beings would give up their agency, give up their ability to decide for themselves and allow governments to do this to them. But they are all over the world. And in countries where people are educated, in countries where people are smart, they should know better. But out of fear, they've made the decisions that they've made. And they're going along with very bad decisions. It's incredible.
And I also specifically say the type of leadership we have, because I'll say I think a lot of people have this subconscious thought of, oh yeah, because the government is there for my good. So they're making decisions that are for my good, right?
Yeah.
And this time has been a bit of an unlearning. Even for me.
I hope so, because
actually
the one thing we know for sure is that the government is not there for your good. They are
I think a lot of things one could have twisted beforehand, you know, the corruption or I don't know how the ANC plays its games.
Well on that
you
note,
could have justified this, you can't.
On that note, I saw a tweet from Tito Mboweni. It's dated the 14th of November, so it's what, 4 days ago?
Saturday.
It's Saturday, okay, two days ago. He says this is our finance minister, all right? Bear in mind, this is the Minister of Finance. This is what he says. then a tweet. One old man in Alexandra Township once called me aside during a meeting and said to me, "Babumbuweni, tighten the state hand. It is a bit soft and nice. Squeeze. Let everybody feel the presence of state power and force." And Tito says, "I agree with the old man. We are too nice." Now that, that's Tito Mboweni, who's supposed to be one of the smart people in government.
Mm.
I don't like that at all.
Well, he also tweeted his shock and horror at how the Bushiris left the country. He was asking how did we let the Bushiris leave the country?
How did you let? Not us. We're not the citizens who have law enforcement at our disposal. Not us, Mr. Finance Minister. Your government, your friends in cabinet, your people who are running the bureaucracy. That's who's to blame. And why don't you go and tidy up your own house before you worry about tightening the state hand around people's throats? Is that really the way you think? I'm very disappointed. After reading that, I'm like, you know what? Tito Mboweni can go and get fucked. That's how I'm feeling. All right, so everybody have a happy day. It is Monday. We don't want to finish on a bad note. It's,
it's a
brand new week ahead of you. You never know. This could be a great week. Look at Leanne. She had a great Friday at 13th, so anything's possible.
Yes.
And Sia,
positive people.
Sia, I hope that your hamstring is okay for later on when we do the TV show. Otherwise, you're going to be limping around on a crutch.
I'll see you with my cane a little later.
Oh, dear.
Old man Sia. Old, so young, but so old. Hopefully, Sia will be better. All right, everybody, have a happy day. CliffCentral.com is here to keep you entertained and amused and informed throughout the course of the day. There's lots of programs you can listen to, lots of great podcasts that you can listen to. And go and check out the Shark podcast, which is also on the main page on CliffCentral.com. We want to know what you think of it. It's really cool. I started listening to it on my way back from the game reserve, so I'd like to know what you think of it. Tell us and give us the feedback. Thank you. See you tomorrow.
CliffCentral.com.